20. And good evening. Can you hear me?
No, it's not on. Oh, there we are. So, Om Shanti, and welcome and good evening. And we're so fortunate to have Brother Charlie with us on this family night. And a couple of days ago, we were in the office and we were talking about having Brother Charlie for one of our family nights, and also, you know, who would interview him. And I thought, what an opportunity. I thought, yes. And I'm so lucky to be on the stage right now. So really, I think today is going to be more of a discussion, and really to involve all of you in that as well. And if you feel, as Charlie's answering the question, that there's something else that comes to mind and you'd like to know a little bit more, then please just raise your hand so that we've got more of a conversation going on in the room this evening. And so we've just come back from the UK Teachers, Charlie, and the theme today was successful family and success. And it was a beautiful day, a very powerful day in Leicester. And one of the things that came up on that retreat was defining the criteria for success on a personal and a service level. And what came up with in the group was things like faith and trust and acceptance, honoring yourself, valuing yourself. So what I'd like to ask you is, what's your criteria for success for yourself and for service in general?
Thanks, Sam. Nice to be here. I'm going to start with service first because they're a little bit interlinked. You know, for me these days, thank you, Rosemary. I feel the whole criteria for me for success is unity. And what I feel these days is that I'm not so concerned really where the service grows. If it does, it's a benefit. But to me, a much greater priority is unity within this community, because ultimately, or this family, I really see that's how Baba will take his place on the world stage, because the world is just so rife with disunity at the moment on absolutely every level. And I think that our learning, our huge learning to live in this family with such a variety of sanskaras and the ultimate application of God's truth is that we work together even if we're totally different. And to me, I just love to see that, because all of us know, how do you feel when you feel a part of a team? You know, you just, it's the most lovely feeling. I think it's sort of intrinsic to the best human experience, if I can say, is when you just feel a belonging in a team. It's just so nurturing and powerful. I think unity, and there's so many sort of sub-factors involved in that. And I feel we sort of come together and we get to know each other. As we get to know each other, inevitable differences emerge, which is good. And then we have to apply Gyan and Yoga to bring ourselves to a place where we can work with those. We don't see them as something wrong or bad. In fact, they create the value in the family. And being able to respect someone who thinks differently from me, I think is absolutely essential, and allow people to be different. And I was only saying, I can't remember where it was, in the last day or two, there are sort of stages which they talk about in groups, you know, the forming, the storming, the norming, and the performing, or something like that. And I feel that moving from storming, and storming's inevitable in the sense that things, you know, differences will emerge, is accepting difference. And in a community like us, where we all know Srimat, We all know what God teaches. And yet, it's for me, and I think a benevolent attitude to others is absolutely critical for my spiritual growth too. It's absolutely part of this life to emerge a benevolent attitude. And to be able to have that with people you work with on a daily basis is a real sign of spiritual strength, I would say, to be able to do that. For me personally, I think it's...
Can you just tell us how do you do that? Because we know that it's the people that we work with on a day-to-day basis where there isn't often that unity, and you think that it should be there because we know them quite well and we live with certain people for many years. So how to create that sense of unity within myself first, so that it's natural, it's not just putting up with?
Yeah. I mean, I think I came to a point in my journey where I quite frankly feel unless I learn the art of valuing those around me, respecting those, you feel stuck spiritually. I think quite frankly, you know, we just get stuck in this place of a headspace of this one's like this, you know, we make so many assumptions about each other, and it's sort of falling back into our old patterns in a way. And I really felt stuck unless I could see the value in those around me. And that's why I was going to say it sort of connects back to me the biggest learning curve in this life is step by step by step rebuilding my self-respect based on, you know, gyan and yoga, not anything superficial or temporary, but a really genuine, and that's, I would say, you know, a lifelong journey. We all know it. But when I have a sense of self-respect, I can value others. And I was, you know, just saying, we always think of somebody when we're talking about this, and it's Daddy G, you know, she came from a place of self-respect. She valued everyone. And because of her, I often feel her attitude held the whole yajna together. Just the attitude of the instrument to value. And I think, I remember once in Melbourne, she was with us. It was Sydney, actually. And we were just chatting, and a lot of us, we were just sitting around, and we just said, Daddy G, how do you run this huge yakya with so many different people and souls? And I remember she said, first I listen, then I teach. Then she said, I trust everyone. And I remember a few, one or two said, really? I mean, really? Can you do that? And yet she said, I trust everyone. I invest trust in everybody. And you know, when you feel that, I think it, you know, it's so uplifting. It's sort of a part of, it's the attitude. Everyone can feel your attitude. I trust everyone. And then she said, I never try to control. Yeah, and she was so wise, actually, because she said, when you don't try to control, if you give people freedom, automatically they will come close to you. If you try to control, as you know, you sort of push people away. Yeah. And Daddy G was just incredibly wise. And as you know, I'm sure everyone heard her say that I've heard her say many times, she never wanted to lose the blessings from the hearts of the Brahmin family. Because she said when you understand the power of that purity of good feeling, you know, we all know when you get that incredible purity, that good energy of just love and good feeling, how uplifting is that? And she was said, I'm careful not to do an action that I lose that, you know, because it takes time to create, but it can be lost in a second, in a sense. And Daddy G was so, and she said that energy kept a lot of her enthusiasm and motivation going.
Beautiful.
Mm.
So what I'm hearing, Charlie, is unity, but also self-respect and trust.
Yep. I mean, to me, I think unity, and we all may feel that our unity has a fair way to go, but I was in Toronto just a month or so ago, and I was driving with some brothers from India. And they were telling me about a few organizations in India. They were saying, oh, this one has split into 5 groups. This one split into 12 groups. And I thought, hey, we're not too bad, are we? We have our moments, you know, and yet I often feel that there will come a time, because the focus will come on the Brahma Kumaris, and when the outside world looks in and maybe is a bit sort of critical or whatever, I think the bond, I find the bond in the BK family is so deep. On the surface, you know, differences happen, but when it comes to the crunch, our bond and our love and for each other is really, really strong. And I think it's really strong.
Thank you, I agree with that. You want to add to anything? Do you want a mic?
You can call me Anthony Joseph.
Yeah, great. How would you describe unity among us? In the field, in with the awareness that
we take the mic because it's being webcast, yeah.
Charlie, how would you describe unity with all our differences that we have, and also within our deep transformation, because we all know that the deepest sanskars have been now transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And it will happen until the last second. So how would you describe unity amongst us? On that level?
Well, you know, I think that no one's happy with the world like it is. The people in this room have put up their hand to say, rather than just a constant negative stream of criticism about everyone and everything happening in the world, we have looked at ourselves. And we know on this journey, sometimes you go through rough patches. And I think that when you've gone through them yourself, difficult periods, you have a lot more compassion for others when they're going through. And I really feel it's just so important to have that drishti of support, if I can say. And, you know, sometimes I think one of the specialties in some of Baba's children is what I call spiritual support. It's very different from emotional support. Emotional support is, you know, when someone's going through their stuff, and sometimes it's important to talk to them. But you know how sometimes you talk, and someone feels a bit better, and tomorrow they come back, and it's back to the square one. More talk. To me, spiritual support is something which Baba, the daddies, really do, where you, once again, hold the value of someone in your attitude. You know, even though they're fluctuating, you can see beyond the present fluctuations. You can see the value in the soul. And I've experienced that many times. That someone now is fluctuating, going through their stuff, but you can see the quality of the soul. And when your vision moves to there, it's like a support for them. But I just think the unity is allowing myself to accept people who are different. You need a lot of self-respect, because I find that if you don't have self-respect, people who live their Brahman life differently, we feel threatened, we feel uncomfortable, you know? Because sometimes I think Brahmins can go through a little bit of a phase of being a spiritual policeman, you know? Have you ever met spiritual policemen who want to sort of, you know, it's very superficial spirituality, watching people, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. This journey's for me, and that's why, you know, I think Dadiji was a model of respect and valuing, and I, ultimately, to me, it's the only thing that works, and it's the wonderful thing that I have to educate myself to see good in other people. And I can remember, at the end of a season, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the last Moli, I don't know whether you remember, Baba was so strong. It's not that you should see virtue in each other. He said it's absolutely necessary. You have to do it. It was, you know, when Baba gets adamant. Because it's a part of our spiritual journey. And I was sharing a little bit about it this morning. It's not that you don't see what's wrong, but you don't create feelings on the basis of that. That's, you know, even Baba can see our weakness. Baba can see, you know, what's not happening. But you don't create negative feelings, critical feelings, bad feelings, and you don't, you know, carry that to other people as well. And it's just so important that, you know, we work together, because honestly I feel, you know, I remember once Baba said, how will Baba be glorified? And Baba said, when one of all backgrounds, you know, all cultures, all nationalities, all religions, all professions, you know, like here, says my Baba together. You know, we're all extremely different, and yet we're here because of this common love for Baba. And but it's a process, we know, and I think sometimes we almost have to know what disunity is to really create unity, you know, and how much you really want that. And I find in the Brahmin family, we all want that, but sometimes I think we become, you know, too, how can we say, judgmental. I was, you know, we just become too judgmental, I think, of each other sometimes. There's a word that's just slipped my mind. Pardon? No, yeah, I think our sense of justice deceives us. Mm. That's what I was trying to think of. In the sense that we see some behavior that according to the Brahmin family is inappropriate. So my sense of justice kicks in, and I justify bad feeling. I justify my criticism. I'm right. I'm coming from the right place. But I can remember Baba saying, they've made a mistake and you've made an equal mistake by sort of, you know. And I think that we're at a time that it's just so important to give value to each other. So important.
Just staying on the same topic, because it's a really interesting topic, Charlie, maybe just being a bit more specific, because I think what happens when you're seeing somebody else's upheaval is that it triggers something within you.
Mm.
And to hold that, the value for that soul at that time is challenging, because it's triggering my own stuff. And so really to ask you, what have you done personally? I know you've said you, how did you do that? What were the step? What was the effort that you made personally to be able to get to that stage where all that stuff is going on, but you're able to, you know, just see what's real and what's true and what's valuable? So take us back like 10 years when
you may not have been there. I don't know. Or 15 years, I don't know. You know, so that we get a sense of your journey at the same time.
You know, I think it's all related to this massive learning curve of self-respect, because, you know, I think all of us, I started with, you know, I think not much self-respect, so was sensitive to things, but I do feel that, and people, you know how little tiny things can just rock your boat so easily, but I really feel all the years on the service field, all the years in the heart of the Brahmin family have helped me, you know, I feel quite stable, just quite stable, because I honestly believe that when you really do what Baba says, in the sense of have all relationships with one Baba, it's the gift of self-respect. And to me, when you take the gift of self-respect, you can respect others. You feel love, and you can be, you know, loving, and I think life becomes easy. It just becomes easy. You're not so self-absorbed. Yeah. I think sometimes even trying to be a good BK, we become so self-absorbed in, you know, over-analytical and sort of too sort of. So if I feel I'm not quite right, I feel very.
Yeah. Thank you. Let me move on to another question. Anybody else want to dive a bit deeper into that question? Can you move on? Okay. So what I wanted to ask really is about we've on the journey for a while. We meditate. We follow the timetable, And we have this beautiful time in the morning from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. where it's, well, for me personally, that's the time for my study, my self-progress, etc. And then after 8 is other things. Then it's like work or service. And then for me personally, I don't always carry that energy into the rest of the day. And yet I value it, and that's like my foundation. And yet I value it so much, but still I find that I get caught up into the tasks and the things that need to be done. And then you hit 7:30, well, for me personally sometimes, and you know, I think, oh God, you know what happened during the day, kind of thing. And so, and I think more and more the effort is to really hold the energy in the space whilst in action. And so the question really is, how do you do that? How do you do that? Because I think that's what's needed. Otherwise, we are going to keep sort of clashing, and we are going to be sensitive if I'm not kind of, you know, using that energy in a practical way. Make sense?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is our journey. I think for me that I was in Gyan maybe 10 years, and I was in Madhuban once, and I had just such a profound experience about that this whole university is based on becoming soul conscious.
Mm.
And I remember I came back and I put a little thing on my wall, like, from a lot of signs of body consciousness to soul consciousness, you know, how far have I actually moved from the old story to the new story? And it wasn't very far, actually, in reality. You know, how much do I identify? Because I think we move a lot on faith rather than practice. And to me, the more you're in that natural soul conscious state, it works throughout the day. It just sustains you and works with you because you're moving back into a state of consciousness that's truthful. And I feel, quite frankly, we're very superficial in soul conscious practice. And that's the seed, really, of making Baba, the relationship with Baba, really real and present in your day. You're really present. It's not that Baba's distant. And so for some years, many years, I did a lot of experiments in the laboratory of my mind. And I would do one thing over months, not just for a day or two. Because I really, for instance, I said to Didi Manmohini once, I said, Didi, Baba tells us to do so many efforts. You know, some Brahmins get stressed thinking which effort to make. You know, what is the main thing? And straight away she said, to be incorporeal. And that really hit home deeply. And I realized I didn't really have a grip on what that meant. And I started to experiment in the laboratory of my mind. And the question I would always ask myself as I went through the day, you know, as I was doing things, I just kept this one thing. Because I feel if you try to do too many things, you're scattered. You don't really see a result. And the whole question for myself was, how does it feel? How does it actually feel to be an incorporeal being in this corporeal world? And I had the most amazing experiences, and I just found it really sort of helped me carry into the day, keeping just one thing like that. Because what I found is that the more I felt incorporeal, detachment was completely natural, not a contrived thing, you know. I'm being detached, you know. You know how contrived these sort of things can be, but it's a natural byproduct when you're in the right space. And I've done experiments about eternity, experiments about the form of the soul, and I think, you know, sometimes we try to try too many things, but it's the fundamental teaching. And I've been thinking recently, you know, the one soul who's eternally truthful, who retains truth, is never tainted, you know, in any way, Baba, what is he telling me to do? And there has never been a Morley I've heard that he hasn't said, he shares, Brahma Baba, Shiv Baba speaks, and Brahma Baba shares his practice. So it was top of mind for Brahma Baba. And to me, I think, I really do feel it's too superficial in us, because when you have that soul conscious practice, all the bits start to work, you know, your self-respect, the natural detachment, a sense of content, a whole lot of stuff. But when I'm in the old story, then all the old things keep. Of course, it's a journey. But, and that's where I think the feeling I got in those 14 years at the beginning of the Yajna, they created this unbelievable environment. It was like this university to study the truth of the original state of the human soul. And that's what we have to recreate, because we're more, you know, when I came to Gyan, I still think the culture of the Yajna was self-realization, but it's much more service now. I don't think that's right or wrong, but we get caught up in that, and then we get caught up in the old game of seeking my value through action and service and results and outcomes, rather than through my relationship with God and the real work of soul conscious practice. And to me, that's fundamentally what, if you do that in the early morning, it will stay with you and grow with you during the day. But I really do feel, try it. And just, I used to even sometimes keep little diaries. I don't, you know, I enjoyed it. I tried to make it a research, an internal research. And the question always, not just an intellectual belief, but translating it into a feeling. How does this, and even eternity, you know, if you've ever gone around for weeks on end just exploring that concept, it's amazing. Your relationship with fear, your whole relationship with fear begins to change.
So I'm just thinking, you know, Baba talks about a balance of self and service, and this morning I think, or whenever, gentlemen were sharing that, you know, it's not that we just sit in tapasya for hours and that's not going to help, but I do feel in a way that we need to do a bit, need to do less. I kind of feel that service is a huge machine, and as a family, to be able to create spaces, more spaces, where we can have this quality of time that the beginning of the Yajna had, where they were just really in a bhakti and they were really doing the groundwork. And I almost feel at the end something similar will happen. And so what are your thoughts, like maybe shut down GCH for one week and just have a bhakti? I'm kidding, but because service is expanding and souls of course need what Baba offers, etc. but I almost feel how to create that space so that we're not doing it on our own in our houses, but collectively we're coming together on a regular basis, not just class, not just to begin to create this kind of atmosphere of power, you know, that's going to serve myself and of course serve them, the people that come into whichever space it is. Because I think what happens, you can roll out programs and people are coming, but I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Not really. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
Yeah, that balance. Because of course people come here and they feel, wow, Global House is amazing, whichever center, the atmosphere is beautiful. But it could be more if we felt that kind of power within ourselves.
But you know, my feeling is that sort of reducing service doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I don't feel it does. Mm-hmm. And I remember once Baba asked a question. He said, is it better to be a Maharati of yoga or a Maharati of service? And so Baba said, what do you think? And what did everyone say?
They said yoga.
A Maharati of yoga, you know, everyone. And Baba said both. Baba said both. Because we need the power of yoga gives me purity of thought, and the power of service gives, you know, the account of pure action. We actually need both. It's not so much the service's problem, it's what's behind the service. It's my...
Yeah.
Because we fall into the pattern of one seek, you know, we get caught up in these very human feelings of jealousy and competition and power games, and all the human stuff just comes back because it's not perhaps coming from the right place, you know. But I feel, you know, the atmosphere... Who was there when Dadiji left the body. Who was in Madhuban at that time? I don't know. Do you remember being at the atmosphere? It gave me a real vision of the future, actually, because I arrived the day before Dadiji left the body, and when I walked into where Dadiji lived, in Dadiji's cottage in Shantivan, all the senior sisters were there, a lot of, you know, the seniors, and everyone, no one said hello, but they said hello through the eyes and drishti. You know, it was amazing. Everyone was in silence in a natural way. It was such a sweet vibration. And, you know, I could go on and on and on about it, but for two or three days there was speaking, but minimal. And it was almost like I often think of it as a spiritual soup. Everyone, there was so much love, and we're all contributing to this spiritual soup and then drinking from that, you know. Mm. And it was so powerful. And to me, this is the power of the Brahma Kumaris, is the atmosphere. People are much better at speaking and doing all that, but our specialty, we create vibes like absolutely no one. Mm. And I think there will be a time when I feel we will all be aware that time is short, that I've got this amount of time to create my eternal path and fortune. Eternal, you know? I think it's going to hit home really deeply. And so we will only speak what is necessary. And I think, and we'll be conscious of accumulating spiritual strength and spiritual power. I think that will create, and people will just come into the atmosphere and they'll almost learn from the atmosphere. We won't have to even say much. Mm. You know, just, you are a soul. I really feel that, you know, that's be enough for most. And they will feel it. And I think that's going to be, you know, the power of this gathering, the energy that will really, because people, you know, I've been in, once I remember once, Daddy was in Melbourne, actually, and we had a program, and about 2,000 people came. And it was in a town hall, and it had wooden floors, you know, noisy wooden floors. Mm. And at one point, just in the middle of it, Daddy just stood up, and you know how she sometimes does, in silence, and the whole place went totally silent. And the atmosphere, she gave like a one-hour talk. Everyone commented on that atmosphere, not so much what they heard, but what they felt. And people, that's what people really want, you know. And I think if we learn to craft atmospheres, you know, and we're incredibly good at, when we have yoga buddies, we all feel, you know, uplifted by that atmosphere.
Yeah.
I think it's really our specialty.
You know, I'm just remembering, I'm just reading what Murali and Baba was talking about, in a way, what is success in service, and he was talking about the power of silence, and it's only through that that Baba will be revealed. And so, is that what's necessary? It's not just sitting in a butti, but it's almost holding that silence whilst in action.
I think
that's the art.
It is.
That I'm almost detached whilst doing what I do on a day-to-day basis, and that's perhaps more powerful than
it is
just a butti sometimes.
Because, you know, the real thing that people take is feelings.
Mm.
And as you know, when you communicate, the majority of the effect of communication is feelings. So when our feelings are in that space with Baba and we're feeling completely light and that energy, I think people feel, and when a group of us are like that too, people, that's our power, I feel, is just creating atmospheres and moving around and giving people those feelings. That's why even the daddies have such impact on people, because people, the vibes just sort of engulf people. And, you know, the fragrance of the mind does its incredible work. Yeah.
Great. Is everybody okay? Any questions that are popping up as you're hearing Brother Charlie speak? Yeah. And over there.
Just your comment on theory, community, could you elaborate on
that?
Just Charlie's comment on fear and eternity. I just, if he could elaborate on that. I'm fascinated by that, or I'm curious.
Well, you know, I think experiencing, and I'm especially saying that word, that I always exist. I'm eternal, I always exist, is at the heart of soul consciousness in a way, because I think the fear of loss is just so, loss of my body, loss of my reputation, loss of my relationships, it's just so scored in the body conscious mind, you know, that sort of, it's a part of, and I think that's why there's so much anxiety in the world at the moment, because people are tuning in to the part in the subconscious that they're going to lose all the things they've invested in. And that's the incredible anxiety. And yet, I think that when I realize I always exist, so much of the fear of losing all that temporary stuff that I've invested in. Because a few years ago, a lot of my thinking around was the whole of contemporary culture is investing in that which is temporary. And that's why there is so much fear. And yet Baba's culture is investing in that which always exists. And if you make your platform, you know, the relationship with the eternal self, the relationship with God, and even the relationship with others as souls, really I think the majority of your fear breaks down. The whole fear game of attaching your heart. The more, we know, the law says, the more you attach your heart to anything, you build fear into your life. And the freedom, you know, when the soul, and rather than trying to deal with my fears, practice to experience what it is to always exist. And I think the fears have less power over us. And that's where I feel the real depth of soul consciousness, the going into what it feels to be eternal, what it feels to be incorporeal. You know, if all the form of the soul, you know, these sorts of things. I think this is the real exploration, this is the real work to build a soul conscious stage that is really stable and solid. I don't know whether you've ever heard Dadi Ratanamohini sharing her experience at the beginning of the yajna. Has anyone ever heard? I remember she was once saying how Baba created such an atmosphere. You know, like they'd wake up in the morning, they'd sit in the bed, I the soul, you know, of incarnate, I the soul walk, I the soul bathe my temple, I the soul, you know, like Baba just drummed it, because Baba knows the addiction, the absolute addiction to identifying with this temporary. We all know it. And that's where I wonder, you know, how far have I really moved on the journey to soul consciousness? And that chart I did, I could see that, you know. And I remember even once Baba said, it's not that you're body conscious, it's not that you're soul conscious, it's not that you're really body conscious either, you're action conscious. Mm. And really, that's where we've got our self-respect for half a cycle. And that's why that's one of our addictions, to just run into doing something. And it's good. Baba wants us to do service, but he wants us to do it from a place, a different space, than just seeking my sense of value by doing an action and getting the fruit. And if I don't get the fruit often, then that's where hurt and upset and a whole lot of other stuff kicks in.
Maybe that's part of the process, because you do that and you think, oh my God, there's nothing, you know, there's no attainment, the attainment that you actually want, and then you start doing the inner work. There was a question over there, actually, as well. It's brotherless.
Are so many things that you're talking about making a real river of thoughts going through the mind, which is probably not a good thing, but then again it may be. So I get attached to things because behind those things there are principles, and I value those principles. So anti-corruption, freedom, human rights, I get attached to those, and I think they're important, that I put my energy there. And to do that, I need motivation. And I realize that there's a way of doing things, which is maybe more BK than human. But in my everyday life, I'm human. I'm a body with a mind, which is achieving things, planning things, and carrying them out. How do you see your life in doing those things and achieving those ends?
You know, I really do feel that it's good to have high standards. It's, you know, a lot of Brahmins, we have great love for, you know, truth in society and, you know, a lot of good things which you just described. But I do think that even attachment to them is, you know, polarizes things, and it doesn't really help you, and it doesn't really help the cause either. And at the other side of things is we have to see the context of life today. If we're attached to certain principles, we can have the principles. I'm talking about the attachment to the principles. So it will only cause sorrow, because this world is breaking down in every imaginable system, and we have to use gyan that it is going to break down in front of our eyes. You know, one of my closest school friends ran one of the UN agencies in Geneva. He's a lovely person. And he had to give up. He just said it was having such a stress on his health and things, because he said everyone in that system was so attached to, you know, what was going wrong with the environment, you know, the corruption in governments, the multifold problems, and it builds anger and resentment. And he said all these good people just became bitter and twisted. And I think Baba's given us a context to understand. So we can maintain the principles, but if we're too attached to them, you know, I think we just cause ourselves suffering, at least in this time of the cycle. You know, there's a couple in our retreat center in the Blue Mountains, and they were just ardent environmentalists. Beautiful people. They built an environmentally friendly house 100%, and they really lived their principles. And when they first did the course, you know, and Baba says that it's all going to be destroyed, there was a little bit of a reaction. No, there was a lot of reaction, actually, come to think of it. But when they really couldn't, they almost felt relieved, you know, because And now they're trying to help a lot of their friends in that movement who really, the rising anger, and we can all feel it, of people with high principles on so many levels in the world, we can become a bit bitter and twisted. So it's beautiful to have them, but when we get too attached to them, too forceful, and then we get angry, we get resentful, a whole lot of other things, I don't think that's Baba's way. And I remember David Ennals, who you all remember better than me perhaps, but I gave him the course in Mount Abu, and I remember him saying, and I think he said quite a few times that, you know, Genji Ben and Daddy used to say, oh, you should never get angry for any reason. And he said to me, Charles, I think a little bit of righteous anger is okay. You know, I thought, and I asked him, you know, what's righteous anger? I didn't get a good answer, you know. But, you know, I think, we're really, our attachments are going to be so challenged on every level, because everything in front of us is just going to disintegrate, I think. And even within our Brahman family, if we become too attached to certain ways of things too, you know, our learning. And if you think, we came into the cycle as a clean soul with no past. Just imagine, think what we've accumulated, and ultimately we've got to step back from all of that to prepare to go home. And I think attachment to ideas and beliefs, yeah, even those things we have to review. Mm.
The brother speaks about the highest principles in the world. We speak of different values. From time to time, there's a gap.
Dilemma.
And, okay, talking about UN, okay, they don't live the standards probably that they teach, but there are still the highest available principles in the world. We Brahmins are still effort makers. We have this highest goal, this highest aim, these highest values in our intellect, but we don't always live them. Not because of choice, but because of we are aiming to them. And so when you work in the world with people who live the highest principles that are available, and so how do we don't lose their faith, because we can't reject those principles. We have to value them.
Because yes, of course we don't try to break people's faith, because they still believe in the systems and customs of a body conscious culture. They've invested all their truth in that. So I think we can offer an alternative with a lot of love. And you know, as I said, like that couple, it can be a huge relief for some people to see the bigger picture, why the world's collapsing in front of their eyes and faster and faster. But if they can't really deal with that or accept that, then yes, you know, we maintain respect and support. I think Baba's way is to just maintain that respect, but we can offer it in a language that they can maybe relate to, if that's possible. But you know, it's a whole framework, the body conscious framework. You know, we want to save the world at all costs, because we want to save life at all costs. But Baba's way is, you know, let it all go and let's start for fresh. You know, it's quite a different approach. You know, it's a big mess. Let's clean it all up and start for fresh. You know, and that's when, you know, the idea of the eternity of the self and these sort of things and the concept of death, it's wonderful. We are so lucky to understand these truths. How lucky are we? You know, but how we work with people, I think we really have to be highly respectful.
Yeah. Mm. Any other questions from the floor? I just have one. It's a personal question. It's based on what you were saying earlier in terms of your practice. And you were saying that then your percentage of soul consciousness was whatever it was. And just interesting, so what is it now then? And the other question is also, you know, how has your meditation practice changed over time to get you to whatever level of soul consciousness you think you are at now? In other words, how do you meditate? What do you do? Break it down for us. You might think, well, yeah, we want to know. Well, I want to know. And so, what would you say? And being modest, you know, being honest. Where are you now? And what do you do when you're in Amrit Vela? And, you know, we know it's the incorporeal stage, but what are you doing at that time?
I was just touched on a little bit the other night in that program here, because recently I've been really fascinated why Baba never uses the word meditation. He only uses the word remembrance. And I think for a lot of Baba's children too, meditation is difficult. Mm. Because meditation implies you've got to force yourself to sort of move into a different state of being. We use it for the world, but Baba never uses the word. He uses remembrance. And I Really, I feel because remembrance is totally natural to the human consciousness. It's we are constantly remembering. It's a part of the intellect to remember the past, remember what I have to do, remember what I have to say to somebody. We're just doing it at every millisecond. And what I began to feel that when you remember, the subtle thread of the intellect connects. You plug into a person or a situation. You are instantly, in no time, you're influenced by that thought. And you download a feeling into your mind. And my sort of image began that, you know, Baba says, constantly remember him who's full of everything I need. So you're influenced by God and you download his feelings into the sacred space of your mind. Mm. But what we're doing during the day, we're sort of plugging in sometimes three or four things at the same time. And we're putting myself under all these very subtle influences of a slightly difficult relationship, an anxious scene, I'm coming into the future. I keep plugging in, plugging, being influenced and downloading this sort of, not even negative, but wasteful energy. So my feeling this at the moment is, it's made me so attentive. And to me, the whole question is, if I'm not feeling happy, if I'm not feeling good, what am I remembering? And you'll absolutely notice you've plugged into a memory, you've plugged into someone's behavior, you've plugged into self-doubt, you're plugging in and you're being influenced by these stories. Mm-hmm. And God's message is plug into him. And one thing that I've sometimes shared that really touched me was when Baba was meeting Daddy Nirmala Shanta, and Baba gave her drishti and then said, "You're busy, aren't you?" She nodded. Baba gave more drishti and said, "You're very busy, aren't you?" She nodded. And then Baba just said, "Many drops make an ocean." Mm. And Baba was just briefed her in a very practical way that the drops of remembrance, accurate remembrance, when I literally plug in, you know, the subtle thread of the intellect remembers Baba, not many drops make an ocean. And Baba was saying, when you finish a meeting and you walk up the passage, remember Baba. When you go for a glass of water, remember Baba. When you do this, when you do that, remember Baba. And when I began to observe myself, what I do, what I was doing, I'm paying more attention now, is that when you leave a conversation, you analyze. You think about it, or you immediately think, what's next?
Mm.
And actually, we think we're busy. Actually, I don't believe that at all anymore. Mentally, we're mostly free. But we're so self-absorbed in my story, how I'm feeling, what's going on, what people feel. We're so self-absorbed in that story that if we just, and what I'm trying to do is re-educate myself in those moments, to go to Baba, go to Baba, go to Baba. Like Baba says, make remembrance a habit. Because really I'm seeing that subtle thread is really the whole foundation of this education, to keep the subtle thread connected to the right source. Because even subconsciously almost we're connected to these sources that make you feel flat or make you feel this or make you feel that. And that's where ultimately it's attention, I would say. It's like attention. And that's why I think Brahma Baba's amazing attention to, you know, the main message of the soul who retains all truth is just to remember him. How much have I really... And I've just been exploring all that. And just being aware, I think I'm remembering Baba more than I was doing.
Yeah. Mm. Is that how you sort of assess your own remembrance in terms of how accurate it is by whether you remember the conversation? Is that how you would, how would you measure if that remembrance, because we're remembering on different levels, but how would you assess that for yourself, whether it's accurate remembrance? What would be the guideline for you?
The feeling.
Yeah.
Because it's the feeling that really sustains and uplifts. And what I've felt, what I feel is that it's so natural, this life. All I have to do is remember Baba. You download all those feelings into the sacred space of your mind, and then your mind does the work. The perfume of your mind sustains yourself, sustains the atmosphere, and sustains people around you. And basically, that's what this our life is about. If we really, I think you can't underestimate a mind that's resonating on the right frequency, the power it has to do. Shift problems, move energies, uplift spirits, do so many. And that's, I think, really where Baba is coming from. And of course, you know, sometimes, and I think I was thinking that, you know, if you sometimes you have to remember someone to tell them something.
Mm.
But as soon as you tell them, that account's finished. Sometimes you just remember somebody, you keep remembering them, so there's some account there, you know, because you keep going back. But sometimes we almost obsess about somebody, you know, just it's like a magnet for the mind.
Mm.
Worry or resentment or something like, it's like, and it's just telling me, I've got a huge account here, and it's stronger than my knowledge and yoga with Baba. It's almost like that's the thing with accounts. Who's more powerful, me spiritually or the pull of that account? And often we bow down to that account and let that account rule me and dominate me. And we all know that can be pretty powerful stuff. Some of these things can be quite strong. But I really just think, I feel that if we really use that word remembrance, it's much more natural.
Mm.
And I think it feels easier. And it's not like, you know, sometimes, oh, let's meditate. You know, it looks like pain, you know. Let's stop meditating, you know. It's a very contrived sort of thing. All Baba's saying is redirect your intellect to me. It's just what you is totally natural. You're always remembering, just redirect it to me. Everything Baba's teaching, I'm feeling, is completely natural.
Thank you. Any burning last questions? And then, Charlie, if there isn't, just your final advice. You've given lots, I know you've given lots this evening, but just one more thing to leave us with. One more thing, because you're going on Tuesday, we don't know when you're coming back. But any other questions before we leave, before Charlie kind of wraps up and ends on a note? Okay, so Charlie, you've been here for a few days, so any advice, I don't know, what's in the heart? What are you feeling to share in addition to what you've already shared? If it comes to mind.
I think... to be fortune focused rather than misfortune focused, because, you know, when I think sometimes I love to sit down and have a reality check. What are we doing here? We've found God, we're living a life with God, we've found my truth, I'm where I belong, everything I've looked for. And when I feel like that, all the little petty misfortunes get cancelled. But it's so easy to focus on all the little petty problems and petty misfortunes, and the big picture is just forgotten. And then I get stuck in a little bit of a stuck place, so to speak. And I just think, for me, sometimes I just try to sit down and remind myself why we're really here and how unbelievably fortunate we can't imagine, really.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That really resonated with me, and I'm sure it resonated with everybody sitting in this room this evening. And I just want to say, Chanda, your hand up, sorry. You want to say something? Yeah. Here you go.
I'm Shanti. Sorry, I missed a little bit because I was away. But I understand what you're talking, starting bit and the end bit. So my question is, when you say, when she's asking you, so you said it's a practical, automatically you does. So I felt the both of. Like when I, well, whatever my journey is, 21 years old in Baba's knowledge. So when I came, the first, well, of course we don't understand knowledge, but the true love for the God, and that's what I got it. And this is the way I never ever make any effort, because when Baba says do effort, so I was asking myself, why should I make effort when I'm like my mom and my children, they're like me, they didn't make effort. So now I'm belongs to you, you are my parents, and whatever your property is my property. And that's just a thought came, and after that my life is goes automatically. Look, whatever you say, it's not people over here, whatever we do, but it doesn't touch me, it's just go other way, whatever other people's attitude or thinking or negative stuff. You know, I was like a little child and it doesn't understand, or, you know, it doesn't make me any think, or, and I'm just lost in the Baba's love and everything. But after now few years, I was really struggling, like whatever Samantha says. You know, when somebody says something and then is irritation, and then saying we're not doing this and this and that. So I understand maybe you say something in between, but whatever you say every time is a love. So my question is, it's really like it's a Baba's gift to us to be like that automatically, and when we don't make any effort, and I'm trying most making effort, and then it's hit me and then again, hit me and then again, you know, like a spider, he goes up and then fall down, then goes up and fall down. So I think about that spider, they won't think, oh, I fall down, so I'm just sitting down, but we do. And then I learn from the spider, okay, when you fell down, don't worry about it and just go up. So is it the really gift when we comes to Baba, automatically, smoothly, we look, everybody is like a perfect, our date is on, and that's what I was thinking in my mind. Because Baba's gave me this service to serve everything. And I was so toxic.
I think it's the, you know, it's the days of childhood. We all have, who had a honeymoon in their childhood? Most have a honeymoon. But, you know, we will all have to face things. And it's good, you know, because that's how we really learn. Issues come up through people or through my own sanskaras, and that's the whole journey of this life. At first often we become emotional and overreactive, but you know, if we apply knowledge rather than just emotion and hurt and all the old story, but apply knowledge, we then really create my own stage, not just the honeymoon that I can't, you know, I build it so that I'm less and less influenced by it. But it's very normal, I think. Wouldn't you agree what she described? I think it's very normal for all of us. We all have to, and sometimes some think, oh, because, you know, 5 years ago my stage was much better, and I'm going backwards. You're not going backwards at all. I think one is to know the aim of this life, but equally important, how to manage a life of self-change, because you're travelling quite nicely and out of left field something happens and a big upheaval can happen inside, just comes from nowhere. And not to overreact or think you're not going backwards. It's just like dramas helping you learn something more about who you are. And if you look at it like that, and like I was sharing a little bit this morning, when it comes through people, they're a messenger to show me what inside of me. They become an instrument to trigger something. If I look at them, I've lost the learning from it. But if I look at myself, they're just an instrument to show me my sanskaras.
Thank you. So thanks to Charlie, and I think we can just show our appreciation. And there's Tony for everyone. So I think Charlie, just to make your way down the steps.
Okay.
And then we can share Tony.
Do you want to have a minute? Or
yeah, first? Let's have
or
a minute.
Just have a minute.
Sure.
Zindagi. जिंदगी एक सफर रास्ते मुश्किल ही सही हौसले घर है बुलंद मंजिले फिर दूर